and wanted him near. They drew apart. It felt as if the clean scent of her shampoo and the delicate, haunting allure of her fragrance lingered, a sweet and poignant memory all around him. "You are here," she said. "Thanks. I know this is crazy, but Hannah, to have survived what happened that October and then have this happen. I understand you're in some kind of law enforcement."
"No, a private investigator. That's why I'm not so sure how I can really be of help here."
"Private investigators get to investigate, right?" Sarah asked. "Why don't you two sit down?" Renee suggested.
Sit, have tea,"
Davy said happily. Once again, Tyler sat. For a moment, the room was still, and everyone in it seemed to feel very awkward. "I'm glad you came," Sarah said. "Not that I really know anything. I belong to a great writers group that brings us down to the FBI offices once a year for research, but I really don't know anything. I don't think the FBI is involved. New York Police, High Crimes, or whatever they call it, division. The killing sounds way too familiar." Tyler nodded.
"Yeah. Though psychopaths have beheaded and sliced up victims many times, I'm sorry to say. And of course," he said, pausing then to take a breath. "Well, we were there. We saw the killer die back then."
He looked over at Davy and smiled tightly, still curious about how Davy had sensed so much of what had gone on.
"We were all there. We saw him die. Davy was a hero. My dad was with me," Davy said.
"In all he taught you, and all you learned so well," Renee said, looking at her son, her soft tone filled with pain for the husband she'd lost.
"The police may already have something," Tyler said. "When a murder like this occurs, they hold back details from the press. You wouldn't believe the number of crazy people who will call in and confess to something they didn't do, wanting what they see as the credit for such a heinous crime. I have friends in Boston who have friends in New York. Maybe I can help. All depends on whether they want to let me in or not."
"Sarah has friends too," Davy said.
Sarah looked at him. "I do?"
"Kieran."
"I haven't talked to her in a while," Sarah murmured.
"Who's Kieran?"
Tyler asked. "A friend, yes," Sarah said, looking at him. She and her brothers inherited a very old Irish pub on Broadway, downtown, near Trinity and St. Paul's. The oldest brother manages. Kieran works there sometimes.
"You worked there,"
Davy said. "I did. I worked there through college," Sarah said. "Anyway, Kieran is a psychologist who works with two psychiatrists, Doctors Fuller and Miro. They often work with the police. They're geniuses when it comes to criminal psyche. And her boyfriend is a special agent with the FBI. So, yes, if I asked for help."
"That's excellent," Tyler told her. "And it could really help, as far as finding out whatever information there is forthcoming. Other than that, I'm not law enforcement."
"But people hire PIs all the time," Renee said.
"When someone is missing, the family might hire someone. In murder investigations that go cold,
we can hire you,"
David said happily. "We're not her family," Sarah said.
"That doesn't matter. We were her friends,"
Davy said. He was quiet a minute and made one of his little frowns.
"She was mean to me sometimes, but she was my friend too. Mostly she was nice to me."
They all fell silent.
"I'll figure something out and I'll keep you posted. I do have a legal standing as a private investigator, but it's a lot nicer if the police want me involved."
Sarah nodded. Again, they were all quiet. "So what's happening in your life, Tyler?" Renee said. "It's so very long since we saw you. Davy has missed you."
I know what Tyler has been doing. I follow his page, Davy said. He dated a model. Pretty girl, Tyler. I think, though, Sarah is prettier. But I saw the pictures of you.
She's very nice, Tyler said. She's in Romania now, shooting a catalog or something like that.
You must miss her, Davy said. We were casual friends. BFFs. That's friends with benefits, Davy told his mother, certain she wouldn't know.
Davy, Renee said. Please, Tyler came as a favor. Let his private life be private. Davy lowered his head. He was chewing on a thumbnail, something he did, if Tyler recalled rightly, when he was nervous or hiding something. You've got to be able to help somehow, Sarah said, as if she hadn't heard any of their exchange. I'm so frustrated. I feel so worthless. And I feel terrible that I didn't keep up with her. I mean, we were friends once. I don't know what that night did to her. We all dealt with it differently, but... She paused, inhaling a deep breath. Sean suggested there was something... She broke off again. He knew what she was going to say. In the confusion with police and parents, and the horror that seemed almost worse when it was over and the garish lights were on, both Sean and Hannah had suggested there was something weird about Davy. That it was downright scary, the way he had known something was really wrong. We talked, Davy and me. I think the police understood, but others didn't. My uncle taught Davy to watch people, to have excellent situational awareness, like an operative or a cop, because people can be so cruel and mean. My uncle wanted Davy to be able to protect himself from that. Davy knew when kids wanted to make fun of him. He was good at avoiding such people. He was amazing at looking out for bullies. He saw that man, Archibald Lemming. He'd noticed him earlier, and he'd seen him go into that particular haunted house. And that was how he knew, but...
I told them, Davy said, nodding grimly.
He brightened.
But they lived.
You were a hero, Sarah assured him. Davy's smile faded and he looked grim.
But now Hannah is dead, and I'm afraid.
You don't need to be afraid, Davy, Sarah assured him quickly. You'll never be without one of us.
Or my girlfriend,
he said brightly.
Megan, he reminded Tyler.
Trust me, young man. Megan's mom and I will make sure you two aren't in any danger. Someone will be with you, Renee said.
Can we still kiss and all?
Davy asked.
We'll look away, Renee promised.
She shook her head. We're trying to keep it real. They have 10-year-old minds and grown-up bodies. Davy giggled. Then he looked grim.
It's scary. Sarah has to be with somebody, too.
Sarah smiled and reached over and patted his hand. Davy, I won't be out late at night. I won't be anywhere without friends.
You live alone.
You could come stay here, Renee said.
Aunt Renee, Sarah said, I need to be near the universities. And here's the thing. We know Archibald Lemming is dead. What happened to Hannah is tragic, and one of those horrible events in life that happened to mirror another. I'll be careful, but I'm always careful. I grew up as a New Yorker, remember? I've been savvy and wary a long, long time. Besides, she paused and looked over at Tyler. This must be random, the act of some horrible, twisted thing that parades as a human being. Tyler went to war. He knows very bad things happen.
We followed you when you were deeped, Davy said.
Deployed, Aunt Renee said.
We were afraid you wouldn't come back, Davy said. Well, I am here, and I will find out what I can to help see that this man who killed Hannah meets a justice of his own. I promise, Tyler said.
rose. He did need to get checked into his hotel room, and he needed to find out if the people he knew had been able to pull any strings for him. "You have my number?" Sarah asked him. He smiled at her curiously. Of course he did. They had been texting.
"Same number, right?"
She shook her head. "Well, it's the same as about 5 years ago." Tyler frowned.
"But you have my number."
"Has it changed?"
"Never. It's the same one I've been texting you on."
I didn't get a text. Davey told me you were coming. Davey was up on his feet and running out of the room.
"Get back here," Sarah commanded.
Davey hadn't quite made the door. He stopped and turned around. He looked at Sarah.
"He needed to come. Tyler needed to come.
You pretended to be me?" Sarah said. "Davey, you must never do things like that," she added with dismay.
"Davey, I should cut your texting time with Megan," Renee said firmly.
Davey sat down, crossing his arms over his chest, his lips set stubbornly.
"Tyler is here. He needed to be here."
Then he threw his arms out dramatically.
"Do what you will."
"Just don't do it again. Ever," Sarah said, horrified. She looked at Tyler. "I'm so sorry. I never would have twisted your arm, made you come here. I mean, it was on national news. You'd hear about it, but..."
"I need to be here," Tyler said softly. "Davey is right. I've got some things to do. I'll be back with you later. We may need help from your friend."
"Kieran," she said. "Kieran Finnegan. And she's living with a man named Craig Fraser. He's great. I don't know if the FBI will be investigating this, but..."
"We'll talk to him."
He wanted to hold her, to pull her to him. But she was already trying to back away. She hadn't done it, hadn't contacted him. Davey had. And Tyler needed to remember that.
"I'll be in touch later tonight,"
he said. He didn't hug her goodbye, but as he went to the door, Davey raced to him.
"I'm sorry, Tyler. I'm so sorry." "It's okay, buddy, it's okay. You're right. I needed to be here. The police might already have a lead on this madman, okay? But I'll be here."
He nodded to Renee and Sarah, then headed out of the house. He imagined Sarah might follow him, tell him that the years had been wasted for her too, that she knew, just seeing him again, that it didn't happen. He drove into the city and checked himself and his car, which was as expensive to park as booking another room, into his hotel. He had barely reached his suite before his phone rang. And this time, it was actually Sarah.
"Tyler," she said excitedly. "We're in."
"What?"
"This makes me feel worse than ever, but I just got a call from a lawyer. Tyler, Hannah left a will. She has me listed as next of kin. She didn't have much money, barely enough for her funeral," Sarah said softly. "But that means that I can hire you, that it can all be legitimate, right?"
"I can work the case, even work it as if you've hired me. That's not the point. I have to form some relationships, step carefully, keep in with the police. We need everyone working together."
"But I am next of kin."
"You will stay, you will." "I will stay," he promised her softly.
And a moment later, he heard her whisper, "Thank you. Thank you." And then, "Tyler?"
"Yes."
"I'm so sorry. I don't know why I lost everyone. I should have been her friend. I really should have been her friend."
He didn't know what to say.
"Time doesn't change things like that. You were her friend, and you're still my friend, Sarah. I still love you. I will see this through. I promise."
And he hung up before she could say anything else.
Chapter 2 Survivor's Guilt, Kieran Finnegan said softly. Kieran was a good friend. While the hectic pace of her life, she worked as a psychologist for a pair of psychiatrists who worked frequently with the police, FBI, and other law enforcement agencies, and helped out at the family pub, often kept her in a whirlwind where she didn't see much of her friends. She was the kind of person who was always there when she was needed. Sarah had called her that morning. It was Sunday noon. Hannah's body had been discovered the morning before. Last night, Tyler had come to Aunt Renee's house. And while Finnegan's on Broadway was doing a sound weekend business, they had a traditional roast entree every Sunday that was very popular. Kieran was sitting down with Sarah. Of course, Finnegan's was in good shape that day as far as staff went. And since Sarah had once worked there, she could probably hop back in to help at any time herself, just as Kieran would do if the need arose. Kieran had assured Sarah she would be there to spend some time with her, talk to her, as a very good friend would do. That made Sarah feel all the worse about the lousy friend she had been herself. Survivor's guilt? She repeated, shaking her head. Honestly, I don't think so. I mean, what happened years ago? All of us survived. We survived because of Davy, though honestly, some of the gruff he had to take afterward. People wanted to know what kind of medium or seer he was. Down syndrome boy sees evil. She was quiet for a minute. Well, I have to admit, I was young and easily irritated, and Hannah, she bit her lip and shrugged. I was annoyed. She liked to have Davy around for the publicity, but then wanted me to leave him home if we were going out for the night or clubbing. She would use him when it seemed he was drawing a lot of attention, and then be irritated if we were spending any real time with him. But now, from what I've gleaned through the media, her murder was brutal, Kieran murmured, and way too similar to the method of the massacre at the theme park. Here's the thing, you're experiencing terrible guilt because Hannah is dead, and she was your friend, even if it was a while ago. You both survived something horribly traumatic, but now she is dead, and you are alive. And all that happened before is rushing back. But Sarah, you're not guilty of anything. Hannah survived that night, along with your other friends, because of Davy. You felt protective of Davy. That was only right. So quit feeling guilty. Hannah did choose to live a dangerous lifestyle. That doesn't mean what was done to her isn't every bit as horrid and criminal, but she may have put herself in danger. You have done nothing wrong. Of course, you could learn to be a bit more open to the possibility there are good people out there, and good things just might happen. And most of your friends truly love Davy. Sarah leaned back and picked up her coffee cup, grinning. Do I have a really big chip on my shoulder? I'm not sure whether I should enter therapy or say 10 Hail Marys. Do both, Kieran suggested with a shrug. She let out a sigh. Sarah, if you weren't really upset, you wouldn't be human, and I'd have to worry about you. Or rather, you would be a sociopath, and I would have to worry about you. She shook her head. Craig was saying that it was uncanny, the remarkable resemblance to what happened before. She hesitated. In the actual killing, that is. Archibald Lemming found himself an amazing venue in which to carry out his bloodlust. What better than a haunted house? But it isn't him. It could be someone who studied him or knew him. Possibly. And someone like that doesn't stop, right? Sarah asked. No, Kieran admitted unhappily. When such a killer isn't caught and the killing stops, it's usually because he's moved on, been incarcerated for another crime, or he died. This kind of thing, it's not just someone who wanted Hannah dead. I doubt it. What was done was overkill. Now, overkill can mean just the opposite. You see it with victims who are stabbed or bludgeoned over and over again. Their killer was furious with them, or sometimes with someone else, and the victim they choose is the substitute for the one they want to kill.
But again, remember, I'm going from what was in the news. The way that this was done, you think there will be more victims?
Kieran was thoughtful.
Yes.
If we're talking a copycat killer who had a fan obsession with Archibald Lemming, I'm afraid there will be more victims. Then again, people are clever. Maybe someone had it out for Hannah and wanted her dead specifically. Make it appear there is a psychopath or sociopath on the loose. There have been cases where several people were murdered in order to throw off suspicion, when just one was the real target.
Archibald Lemming was a psychopath, right?
Yes.
The term applies to someone who is incapable of feeling empathy for another human being. They can be exceptionally charming and fool everyone around them. Ted Bundy, for instance. There are, however, psychopaths who turn their inclinations in a different direction. They become highly successful CEOs or hardcore business executives. They will never feel guilt. A sociopath, on the other hand, reaches his or her state of being through social factors. Neglectful parents, bullying, abuse, some function. They can be very violent, can show extreme bitterness or hatred along with that violence. But they're also capable of feeling guilt and even forming deep attachments to others.
Sarah nodded, listening to Kieran.
It was good, she figured, to have a concept of what they might be dealing with. But dead was dead. Hannah was gone, and it didn't matter if she'd been viciously murdered by one kind of killer or another. It had been brutal. Kieran smiled at her grimly.
I know what you're thinking.
But when hunting a killer, it's helpful to have a concept of what you're looking for in his or her behavior.
Of course. And thank you, Sarah said quickly.
So, Tyler Grant has come back to help? Kieran asked. And you were listed as Hannah's next of kin. That's good. It will allow him a lot of leeway.
The FBI hasn't been asked in yet, right?
No, but Craig has a lot of friends with the police.
Kieran was referring to Special Agent Craig Fraser, FBI. They were living together, sometimes at Craig's and sometimes at Kieran's. He had the better space in NYC, so Kieran would eventually give up her apartment, most probably, and move in with him. They were a definite duo. Sarah was sure marriage was somewhere in the future for them, especially since Kieran's brothers, Declan, Kevin, and Danny, seemed to accept him already as part of the family.
Do you think, Sarah began.
Yes, I think, Kieran said, smiling.
She inclined her head toward the door.
Tyler must have arrived.
Sarah found herself inhaling sharply, her muscles tightening, and her heart beating erratically.
Why?
She wanted him here. She wanted a solution. Hannah's killer caught and put away for life. She wanted forgiveness. Maybe it just seemed that their lives, so easy a decade ago, had come to an abrupt break.
It had become a breach, and she wasn't sure things could ever be really right for her if she didn't come to terms with that.
Once upon a time, she had been so in love with him. High school. They'd been so wide-eyed and innocent, and the world had stretched before them a field of gold.
Kieran stood, waving to him.
You've met Tyler?
Sarah was surprised. She hadn't known Kieran in high school.
No, her friend said, shaking her head. He called about meeting up with Craig. I looked him up after, found some pictures online. Rock solid, so it seems.
Rock solid. Yes, that had always been Tyler.
But how?
Kieran laughed.
How do you think?
Davy, Sarah said.
She wasn't sure whether to be exasperated or proud of her cousin. Devious.
No, being devious wasn't really in his nature. Pretty darned clever, though.
Tyler reached the table. Sarah stood, as Kieran had. It was still awkward to see him. He'd grown into a truly striking man, with his quarterback shoulders and lean, hard-muscled physique. There were fleeting seconds when they were near one another that she felt they were complete strangers. Then there were moments when she remembered laughing with him, lying with him, dreaming with him, and she longed to just reach out and touch him, as if she could touch all that had been lost. He was obviously feeling awkward, too.
Sarah,
he said huskily, taking a second to lightly grip her elbow and bend to kiss her cheek, as any friend might do. That touch, so far away and yet so familiar.
Hey, I hear Davy has been at it again, Sarah said. This is Kieran, of course.
Of course,
Tyler said, shaking her hand. Craig should be here any minute. He had to drop by the office, Kieran told him.
Thanks,
Tyler said. Coffee, tea, something to eat? Kieran asked. We are a pub. Our roast is underway.
I'm sure it's wonderful,
Tyler told her, smiling.
I've heard great things about this place. You're listed in all kinds of guidebooks.
Nice to know.
I would love coffee.
I'll see to it. Black?
Yep. It's the easiest, he told her.
Kieran smiled pleasantly and went to get a cup of coffee for him. Tyler looked at Sarah.
Craig is great. You're going to like him a lot, Sarah said.
I can't believe Davy is making all these connections.
The kind we should have made ourselves.
Kieran was already heading back with coffee, and she was indicating the old glass-inset wood-paneled doors to the pub. Craig had arrived. He hurried to the high-top table where they'd been sitting.
Hey, kid,
he said to Sarah, giving her a quick kiss on the cheek. He looked at Tyler.
Tyler, right? Grant? Tyler Grant. And thank you, Special Agent Fraser. Just Craig, please. And sorry, he added, watching Kieran arrive with coffee. You're going to have to slurp that down. We need to get going. The man on this particular case is a Detective Bob Green. He's a 12-year homicide vet. He worked on the Archibald Lemming case years ago. You might know him when you see him, though he wasn't the one doing the interviews back then. His partner was. He's senior man on his team now. Good guy. We can join him for the autopsy. That's great. Thank you, Tyler told him. I know you have other cases. This caught up with me in the midst of a pile of paperwork, Craig told him. My partner is handling it for me, and my director knows where I am, so it's all good. What about the site where Hannah was left? I can take you there.
Craig turned to Kieran, slipping an arm around her.
Save us supper, huh?
You bet. The affection between them wasn't anything overt or in your face. It was just that even the way they looked at one another seemed to be intimate.
Okay, we're on it,
Craig said. He turned and headed toward the door. Tyler looked back and nodded a thanks to Kieran. He glanced at Sarah and gave her something of an encouraging smile. She remembered his words from last night. He would stay on this. He loved her still. Friends. Yes, sometimes friends loved each other forever, even if they couldn't be together. Autopsy rooms could be strange places. It was where doctors and scientists studied the dead and did their best to learn from them. The NYC morgue downtown was huge. The body count was almost always high. It wasn't that so many people were murdered. New York had had less than 100 homicides in the past year. A large number, yes, but considering that it was home to 8 million plus people, and double that number came through almost on a daily basis, it wasn't such a massive amount. But the homeless who died so sadly in the street came to the morgue, as did anyone who died at home or in hotel rooms, or anywhere else about the city, other than with a doctor or in a hospital, or directly under a doctor's care and with a known mortal disease. Autopsy was no neat room with refrigerated cubicles. Those existed, but for the most part, the place was a zoo comprised of the living and the dead. Doctors, techs, photographers, cops, receptionists, computer crews, and so on. The living went about living, joking, taking lunch breaks, grabbing time to make appointments for themselves, call the cable company, or check on the kids.
Detective Bob Green was a man in his late 40s or early 50s, with a thatch of neatly cut blonde hair that was beginning to veer toward white, a slender face and dark almond eyes that contrasted with his pale skin and light hair.
"Special Agent Fraser," he said, greeting Craig.
Then he turned to Tyler. He had a grave smile and a sturdy handshake.
"I remember you," he told him. "I remember you from the night of the horror park. Do you remember me?" "Yes, I do. You were with an older detective, Mark Holliday, and a police photographer. I think his name was Morrison. You were great to us back then, so thank you. It was hard. At first, I remembered little from that night except for the carnage and worrying about my friends," Tyler told him.
"Alex Morrison. He's still with us.
So, you headed into the military and became a PI, Green said.
"I did. Thought you might become a cop. You were good that night. Composed. You're good in a crisis."
"Glad to hear it," Tyler told him.
"Thank you. To be honest with you two, the autopsy already took place, but Lance, sorry, Dr. Layton, is waiting with the corpse."
He paused, eyeing Tyler again.
"You were there when Archibald Lemming killed all those people. We didn't know if, well, this does beat all. Of course, at this time we just have one dead woman, your friend,"
he added softly.
"And it would be great to keep it that way. But I was there, you were there. See what you think."
He led them into a room where a number of bodies lay on gurneys, covered properly with sheets. A tall, thin man who reminded Tyler of Doc from Back to the Future stood by one of the gurneys. The M.E., Dr. Lance Layton. The man was waiting patiently for them. He greeted Craig with a smile and a polite nod, and Tyler realized he was curious about him, watching to see how he was handling being in a room with corpses. The doctor didn't extend a hand. He wore gloves, Tyler saw.
"You've seen your share of the dead, I take it," Layton said.
4 deployments in the Middle East, sir. Yes, I've seen my share."
Layton nodded and pulled back the sheet. And what he saw was Hannah. What remained. She'd been such a pretty girl, olive-complexioned and with a bit of a slant to her dark eyes. She'd grown up to be an attractive woman, or she would have been in life. If she were alive, her eyes might have narrowed and hardened. She might have looked at the world differently. She hadn't always been the kindest or most sympathetic human being, but she'd never deliberately caused pain. She loved partying. She loved a good time, beaches and margaritas. She'd gone toward the dark side, though she might have been nothing but light, had life not touched her so cruelly. But not as cruelly as death had. Her head sat apart from her torso and limbs. They were in different stages of decomposition.
"How was it done?" Tyler asked,
and his voice was, to his own ears, thick.
"A knife. I believe she was lucky. Her killer hit the artery first. She would have bled out quickly while he continued sawing at her."
Beheading a human being with a knife wasn't an easy thing to do. Strong executioners with a honed blade still had to use formidable strength. English axemen had been famous for botching the job. With a knife. This was Hannah. Taylor remembered the last time he had seen her, not long after the night at the horror attraction. They hadn't talked about it the way they might have. The pictures of the dead in the dining room had been all too fresh in their heads. She had been quiet and grim, as they all had been, with the police. Each had been asked to give an account of what had happened. They'd been kids, ushered in and out, with protective parents or step-parents with them. A silver lining, one of the detectives had said, was that Archibald Lemming was dead. There wouldn't be a trial. They wouldn't have to stand witness. And God help them all. They didn't need another Archibald Lemming on the streets. Now, here, looking at the body of a young woman who had been an old friend, He found his memories were vivid, and they were rushing back. Archibald Lemming had decapitated 4 young people. The bodies had been seated around the table. The heads had been upon it. Taylor looked up at the ME and asked,
"Drugs? Alcohol? Anything on her? Anything that would help explain how she was taken?"
Layton glanced at Detective Green. Tyler figured that Layton's loyalty was to the cop first. He'd obviously worked with Craig Fraser before. Layton wasn't telling him anything until he knew Green approved his sharing of details.
"Alcohol, and yes, cocaine. At the rate she was imbibing, I'm not sure she'd have been long for this world as it was. She'd been partying, I take it. She was last seen at a bar in Times Square," the ME told him.
He glanced at Green again, and Tyler realized he must have learned that through the detective.
"It doesn't look like she put up much of a fight. But then again, the state of the body, being in the water can wash away a host of evidence," Layton continued.
"Thankfully, she wasn't in long.
Her, body pieces were found at several locations along the river, but we believe they were disposed of at the same site. The current washed her up, the parts, just a bit differently. Since they were separate locations, they were discovered by different people."
"The body was cut up," Tyler noted.
"Yes, but most of the cuts are post-mortem. If there is any salvation in this, I think she bled out quickly. The torture inflicted on her after, I don't think she felt. I wish I could say all this with certainty. That's just my educated opinion."
Once again, Tyler remembered the bodies around the table. They had been posed. This could be the same handiwork, as far as the beheadings went. But Hannah hadn't been posed. She'd been thrown in the river.
"It might be a copycat. It might not be," Craig murmured,
obviously thinking along the same lines.
"We'll release the body toward the end of the week," Dr. Layton said. "We're holding on just in case."
Just in case another body or body parts wash up on the riverbank again. Detective Green, Craig, and Tyler thanked him, and they left the morgue. When they were out on the street, Green looked at Tyler curiously again.
"Where are you going from here?"
"Site inspections," Craig said.
"We were going to the bar where she was last seen, called Time and Time Again," Tyler said. "Then we're going along the Hudson, where the parts washed up."
"I don't think the discovery sites will help you," Green said. "Not even the killer could have known just where she'd pop up, or if she'd be taken in by a fisherman or a pleasure cruiser or what.
Maybe you'll get something I didn't get at the bar. Good luck with that."
"If we find anything, we'll call immediately," Craig assured him.
Green nodded.
"I know you will. Good day, my friends."
He headed off in one direction. Craig and Tyler turned in the other.
"Time and time again?" Craig asked.
Tyler nodded. "Time and time again. How tragically apropos." Kieran didn't want Sarah going home. "You shouldn't be alone right now," she told her. "I mean, not with what has happened." Her words surprised Sarah. She hadn't thought about being in danger herself. "I'm not being judgmental, trust me. Not in any way. But I've never led a lifestyle like Hannah was living. I mean, she was trolling for tricks. She was stripping, and not in a fine gentleman's club. Not that a fine gentleman can't be a psychopath, right?"
"Charming, well-dressed, and handsome to boot," Kieran assured her.
"But the murder was so horrible. People are scared. And not just hookers. And if you're not scared, I think you should be. Anyway, wait until the guys get back at the least. I've talked to Chef. He's saving us all a nice dinner. Until then, I need to be doing something," Sarah said. "I can't just sit here."
"What do you want to do?"
Sarah hesitated. "Look up what I can find on the past.
find out more about Archibald Lemming, find out about the prison break, about him and his friend.
The pub office here is all yours. We have a very nice and well-behaved computer on the desk. No one is making any entries on a Sunday. We'll be busy. Make yourself comfortable.
Kieran, that's Declan's computer, she said uncomfortably. She knew the Finnegans and she knew the pub. She had been grateful for such a great place to work when she'd been in school. Declan was the oldest of the Finnegan clan. He had taken on the responsibility of the pub. The others all pitched in, but Kieran's brother Danny was a tour guide, and her other brother Kevin was an actor. The workload fell to Declan. Kieran grabbed her hand. Declan, a handsome hunk of a man with broad shoulders, a quick smile and dark red hair, assured her that she was more than welcome to the computer, to his office, and the run of the pub if need be. Sarah found herself led down the hall to the office. Kieran signed on to the computer there. Knock yourself out, she told her cheerfully once Sarah was set. I'll be wherever for the moment. When Craig and Tyler get back, you can tie up. We'll have roast, and we'll see you locked in for the night. Sarah frowned. She didn't want to be afraid. She was a New Yorker. She had never feared the subway, though she did carry pepper spray. If she'd been afraid of every perceived threat, she'd never have made it in the city. But Kieran was gone, and Sarah didn't know where to begin, other than to key in the name Archibald Lemming. His crimes, even his initial crimes, had been horrendous. He'd received the death sentence, but under pressure by right-to-life groups after his sentencing, the death penalty had been altered to life and 95 years, to make sure that he never got out. But of course, he had gotten out. Lemming's first known victim had been a kindergarten teacher. She'd been found in her home, her head almost severed from her body. He'd managed to get his second victim's head off. It had been left on a buffet table in the dining room while she'd been seated in her favorite chair. He hadn't discriminated by sex. His third victim had been a man, a plumber, who'd been found with his fingers wrapped around a beer, his torso in a recliner in the living room, his head atop the TV. Lemming had been interviewed by the police, since he had hired the plumber to do some work in his home. It was also discovered that he'd had a flirtation going with the first victim, who had lived in his building. He'd been let go. There had been no evidence against him. Then the body and head of his landlord had been found, set up much the same as the others. And despite his charming protests, he'd been connected to the crimes via DNA. He'd cut himself during the last murder, and his own blood had given him away. He'd been incarcerated, where, according to prison officials, he'd been a model prisoner. Until, with Perry Knowlton, another murderer who used a knife, he'd escaped via the infirmary. And gone on to kill and kill again in a frenzy in the haunted house. Sarah sat back and breathed for a minute. This was crazy. She had seen the man die. He had no children, none known at any rate. And if he'd had any offspring, it was unlikely that they knew he was their father. He'd been a loner, no wife, no girlfriend. He'd gone to work every day on Wall Street, and he'd killed by night. She scanned the information on the page again. He was, by pure definition, the perfect psychopath. No emotion whatsoever, no regret. He was cold and brutal. He'd even murdered the man with whom he'd escaped. Sarah frowned and started reading again. Yes, she'd seen Archibald Lemming die. But she sat back, still staring at the screen. And to her own amazement, she thought she had a theory. Chapter 3. Being escorted back to the office by Danny Finnegan, Tyler found himself grateful that Sarah had found such a supportive group of friends. Just going through the pub, he'd heard people call out to Danny and to one another.
Regulars? He asked. They all know each other.
Danny, a leaner, slightly younger version of his brother Declan, shrugged and grinned.
Our folks, and theirs before them, wanted it to be a real Irish pub. Well, back in the day, men had a room and women and families had a separate one, if they were allowed in at all. But hey, progress is a good thing, right? Yeah, we like to be an Irish-American Cheers, and we want everyone to feel welcome.
I do, Tyler assured him.
Danny pushed open a door in the long hallway.
Tyler and Craig are back, Sarah.
She had been very seriously staring at the computer screen and looked up quickly, a question in her eyes. Tyler wished he could tell her that yes, simply going to the morgue had solved the whole thing. He prayed that eventually, and sooner rather than later, they would have answers. It wasn't going to be easy. They had nothing to go on.
Kieran will have roast out for you all in a few minutes. We've got you at a back booth, Danny said, and left.
Tyler dropped into a chair in front of the desk. Sarah stared at him. It was horrible, wasn't it? She whispered. He nodded.
I can't help but remember. We all had such promise.
But did you learn anything?
I met into the bar where she was last seen, time and time again, around 8 or so. If they get some of the same clientele nightly, someone might know or remember something.
He hesitated a moment.
She wasn't working at the strip club anymore. She hadn't been for about 2 weeks. From what I understand, it was a pretty decent place. I've heard it's easy for strippers to become involved in drugs. It helps them through. But there are a number of clubs run fairly well. Professionally. No touching for real, and no drugs. Anyway, Hannah was fired about a week ago. Craig and I dropped by the club after we visited the sites where she was found.
So, wow. I feel worse and worse.
Don't. Something happened that night 10 years ago. We were incredibly lucky. Thanks to Davey, we weren't killed. But we all changed. We became introverted. And when we got over it, time had passed. This was in no way your fault. You have to know that. You couldn't have stopped what happened in Cemetery Mansion any more than you could have saved Hannah now. You have to accept that.
I know.
The thing is, I do think this is random. The first suspects in a murder are always the closest to the victim, except in a case like this. There's no one really to look at. Her last boyfriend was in Chicago when it happened.
Random. Sarah paused and took a breath. I know this may seem far-fetched, but I have an idea who we're looking for. Tyler couldn't have been more surprised.
Who?
Perry Knowlton. He was still for a minute.
Perry Knowlton is dead. Archibald Lemming killed him, too. Police found the ashes in a veterinary clinic before they even caught up with Lemming.
She shook her head firmly. They never proved it.
What do you mean?
I've been reading up on Archibald Lemming and Perry Knowlton all day. I've studied every newspaper article, every piece of video. They found a body so badly burned, there were no DNA samples. Maybe there might have been today, but not back then. They found his prison uniform. They found trinkets he carried. But they never proved without a doubt that the bone fragments and ash they discovered were the remains of Perry Knowlton. Tyler had read up on the killers, too. And she was right. Before, Knowlton hadn't been someone to consider. He hadn't made any appearances over the years and had been assumed dead. He was a killer, too. A serial killer. Like his prison buddy, Archibald Lemming, he had loved to kill with knives. He hadn't been known for decapitating his victims, but for slashing them, the killstrokes being at the jugular vein.
Maybe, Tyler said.
But how? And where has he been? Those are the things I've been wondering. I mean, he'd be in the system. If he'd been arrested for any crime in the past 10 years, his prints would be on record. They'd have known it was him. What? Did he find a distant farm somewhere and hide out for 10 years? Kieran said serial killers don't stop unless they are dead or incarcerated somewhere. She flushed, her beautiful blue eyes wide. I know I just write science fiction novels, but I am good at research.
Sarah, your theory is just as sound as anything else we have at the moment, that's for sure, Tyler told her. I don't know. We can look.
There was a tap at the door, and Kieran stuck her head in. Roast, she said. You need to keep up your strength if you're going to continue working on this thing. That means actually having a meal. Craig says you're going to the bar later. Nothing to do until then except fuel up.
Sounds good to me, Tyler said.
He rose. Sarah still had a bit of a shell-shocked look about her. He walked around the desk and reached for her hand.
Let's eat,
he said. Dinner, she agreed. She stood. Her palm rested in his. He couldn't believe 10 years had passed, and it was still incredibly good just to hold her hand. And then she smiled at him. And he knew. He'd waited forever to be back with her. He sure as hell hadn't wanted it to be like this. But he had never managed to fall out of love with her. And that was why nothing else in his life had ever been more than a fleeting moment in time. Sex between consenting adults. Panacea to ease the pain he'd refused to admit existed. Maybe it was true that there was one person in the world who was simply everything. One person you were meant to love for a lifetime. Still, neither of them had ever fallen apart. They had created good lives. Responsible lives. So why had he left? Because she had pushed him away, and that would never lead to a lifetime of happiness. And of course, he was still afraid she would push him away again, but at least not in the middle of a murder investigation. Not this one. Thank you, she said quietly. There was something soft in her eyes, something that made him think of years gone by. It hurt. And it was good, too. Oddly good.
You're welcome, he murmured.
They made their way back down the charmingly paneled old hallway and out to the restaurant section of the pub. As promised, Kieran had a back booth for them, out of the way of the now very busy crowd. Sunday roast was apparently extremely popular. Although Craig was careful about what he said, Tyler learned the FBI agent had been working on an organized crime case that included bodies found as the result of a rather old-fashioned but very efficient form of retribution murder. They had their feet stuck in concrete and had been dropped in the East River.
My partner, Mike, has been doing some cleanup paperwork for me, but we still have a few arrests to make. I'll be as much help as I can. You've opened doors for me. I'm grateful, Tyler said. And Sarah might have a very good idea for us to pursue.
She hiked her brows in surprise and flushed again. I hope you're not going to think I have an overactive imagination, she said.
We definitely think you have an overactive imagination, Kieran told her.
But that's a good thing.
It pays.
On this, however, what do you think?
Tell them, Tyler urged.
And so she did. Neither Kieran nor her boyfriend looked at her as if she were crazy.
That's true, Craig asked. I remember the case, when Archibald Lemming died here on that table leg. Of course, the entire country talked about it, but I never studied anything on Perry Knowlton. As far as the public was concerned, as far as everyone was concerned, really, the man was dead, a victim of the man he'd befriended. Now that is something I can look into for you.
That would be great. Excuse me, Kieran said. Drinks, anyone? They opted for iced tea all around, and she disappeared to get it. Another smiling waitress arrived with their plates. The food was really good. The conversation became lighter. They learned that Kieran and Craig had met during a diamond heist. Because of Kieran's employers, Dr. Fuller and Dr. Miro, she was able to help Craig with a number of cases. Recently one that had involved the deconsecrated old church right behind the pub. My brother was affected by that one. He'd been in love with the victim, Kieran said softly. That's Kevin. You haven't met him yet, Tyler, but I'm sure you will.
Tyler told them he was living on Beacon Hill. He described his daily work.
I take on a lot of missing children cases, he said. When I'm lucky, I find them. Most often, they're runaways. But when they're not, I have a great relationship with the Boston PD, which is very important. I won't work possible cheating spouse cases. Too sordid. I have worked murder cases, a number of cold cases. It wasn't always that way, of course, but working the cheating spouse thing just seems nasty, and finding justice for someone feels really good.
Have you ever considered coming back to New York, Tyler? Kieran asked.
It's home. One never knows, he said.
Boston, New York, so many great cities, she said. And then she looked at her watch. Whoa! Well, dinner with you two was great. I wish we were heading to a play or a movie now, but I want you to stay focused. It's 8 o'clock.
Time to go, Tyler said, rising.
Are you going with him? Kieran asked Craig.
I have to head to the office for at least an hour or so, he replied. Hey, this man is a good investigator. He'll do fine.
Sarah had risen as well. I'm going with you, she said.
Sarah, Tyler protested. That's not a great idea.
I can help.
How?
I can make you look human and sweet. Better than looking like a linebacker out to tackle someone.
Time and time again was off 42nd Street and the Times Square area, but far enough away from the theater district on 9th Avenue to just miss most of the theater-going crowd. It would best be described, Sarah thought, as a nice dive bar. She definitely wanted all her faculties about her, but deeply disappointed the bartender by ordering a soda with lime.
Don't you want a 9th Avenue special, a dive bar exotic, or a yes, it's time again? He asked her.
He was a young man of maybe 25, cheerful and flirty. Sarah was sitting at the bar. Tyler was meeting with the night manager in his office. No thanks. Just the soda water.
Your friend a cop?
He asked her. She shook her head, smiling though, and looked around. The place was decorated with old posters that depicted the city during different eras. They helped cover the fact that the bar really needed to be painted. No, Tyler isn't a cop.
But he's in there asking about that girl,
the bartender said. He had a neatly trimmed beard and mustache combo, and she wondered if he was a student at one of the city's colleges. Yes, he's asking about Hannah Levine, she told him softly.
I'm Luke,
he said, looking down the bar to see if he was needed. He wasn't. He leaned on it.
The cops have already been all over us. She was carrying one of our promo matchboxes. That's how they knew she'd been here.
He grimaced.
They have raised lettering, really swank matches for this place, but we get a mixed clientele. We cater to the local music scene.
Nice, she replied. He was friendly, and she decided she might be able to help the investigation. She could ask questions, too, and maybe in a different way. Are you from New York?
Nope. Akron, Ohio. Loving being here. Don't be deceived by appearances. This is actually a great place. Yes, we have a few lowlifes hanging around, but it's honest work for me and helps pay the bills.
Hannah was my friend, she said softly.
Oh,
he seemed surprised. He leaned closer to her.
You don't look like a junkie.
Hannah wasn't on heroin, she said defensively.
No, just everything else. She came in here frequently. The owner had barred her for a while, but people liked her. She just, well, she looked for tricks here, you know.
Sarah winced.
Hey, I'm so sorry. I guess you hadn't seen her in a while.
No, I hadn't, but
I can see you care.
He straightened and said,
excuse me,
and hurried down the length of the bar, speaking to customers seated on stools along the way. He refilled a few drinks, whispered to someone,
and then headed back to speak with Sarah.
I don't know what